Page 389, Canto 1, The Destined Meeting Place. But now the destined spot and hour were close. Unknowing, she had neared her nameless goal. For though a dress of a blind and the devious chance is laid upon the work of an all-wise fate, our acts interpret an omniscient force that dwells in the compelling stuff of things. But nothing happens in the cosmic play but at this time and its foreseen place. To a space she came of soft and delicate air that seemed a sanctuary of youth and joy, a highland world of free and green delight, where spring and summer lay together and strove in indolent and amicable debate, inarmed, disputing with laughter who should rule. Their expectations beat wide sudden wings, as if a soul had looked out from earth's face, and all that was in her felt a coming change, and forgetting obvious joys and common dreams, obedient to time's call, to the spirit's fate, was lifted to a beauty calm and pure, that lived under the eyes of eternity. A crowd of mountains' heads assailed the sky, pushing towards rival shoulders nearer heaven. The armoured leaders of an iron line, earth prostrate, lay beneath their feet of stone. Below them crouched a dream of emerald woods, and gleaming borders, solitary asleep. Pale waters ran like glimmering threads of pearl. A sigh was straying among happy leaves, cool perfumed with slow pleasure, burdened feet. Faint stumbling breezes faltered among flowers. The white crane stood a vivid motionless streak. Peacock and parrot jewelled soil and tree. The dove's soft moan enriched the enamoured air, and fire-winged wild drakes swam in silvery pools. Earth couched alone with her great lover, heaven, uncovered to her consort's azure eye, in a luxurious ecstasy of joy. She squandered the love music of her notes, wasting the passionate pattern of her blooms, and festival riot of her sends and hoos. A cry and leap and hurry was around, the stealthy footfalls of her chasing things, the shaggy emerald of her centaur mane, the gold and sapphire of her warmth and blaze, magician of her rapt felicities. Breath, sensuous-hearted, careless and divine, life ran or hid in her delightful rooms. Behind all brooded nature's grandeur's calm, primeval peace was there and in its bosom, held undisturbed the strife of bird and beast. Man, the deep-browed artificer, had not come to lay his hand on happy, inconscient things. Thought was not there, nor the measurer, strong-eyed toil. Life had not learned its discord with its aim. The mighty mother lay outstretched at ease. All was in line with her first satisfied plan. Moved by a universal will of joy, the trees bloomed in their green felicity, and the wild children brooded nor on pain. At the end reclined a stern and a giant tract of tangled depths and solemn questioning hills, peaks like a bare austerity of the soul, armoured remote and desolately grand, like the thought-screened infinities that lie behind the rapt smile of Almighty's dance. A matted forest head invaded heaven, as if a blue-throated ascetic peered from the stone fastness of his mountain cell, regarding the brief gladness of the days, his vast extended spirit couched behind. A mighty murmur of immense retreat beseeched the ear, a sad and the limitless call, as of a soul retiring from the world. This was a scene which the ambiguous mother had chosen for her brief felicitious hour. Here in this solitude, far from the world, her part she began in the world's joy and strife. Here were disclosed to her the mystic courts, the lurking doors of beauty and surprise, the wings that murmur in the golden house, the temple of sweetness and the fairy isle, the stranger on the sorrowful roads of time, immortal under the yoke of death and fate, a sacrificant of the bliss and pain of the spears, love in the wilderness met Savitri. End of Canto 1.